What a song choice by the sound team to usher us into the presence of the Lord. I have been married a long time. This has nothing to do with what I was going to talk about, but that song reminded me of it. I know I look 12 sometimes, but I'm going to be married 18 years this year, right? When you get married at 12, it's incredible, people. It is a real gift. But that is the song that we played to leave the dance floor that night. So that at our dry Baptist wedding. Yeah. Yeah, in Jesus' name. In Jesus' name. I'm really glad it worked out because we got married young, you know, and we joke about it. That's a joke and true, by the way. Like, it's crazy. We got married as children. All right, now to my sermon. All right, we're back. In 2019, I got to spend 2 weeks with Richard Rohr. I don't know if any of you know Richard Rohr. And he had just had a heart attack, and we didn't know if it was going to happen. There's maybe like 20 of us that got to spend just this intense time with him and really just like learn from a rabbi, learn from somebody who's got so much wisdom. And if you don't know Richard Rohr, he's just somebody who, he's been around for decades, right? He's been doing this work for over 50 years. Probably evangelicals discovered him maybe about 10 years ago, but he's just been doing it for a long time. And what I love about Richard Rohr is it's not just that he's an incredible communicator and he's somebody who's really thought through things and he's resimplified. There's something about him being Catholic for evangelicals that makes him feel safe. Like, he's got his own trauma, but it's not our trauma, you know? And so he can like talk about the Jesus thing and Christendom and the faith in a way where you're like, oh, it's fresh over here, but really it's just older and different. But the magic of Richard Rohr is Richard Rohr. Have you ever just been around an old soul and they're just at peace with themselves? They're okay. They have nothing to prove. They have nothing to convince you of. And I long for it. I long for that peace where he just knows who he is. He just knows who God is. And it's something that I realize so much in our world is that I think it's the thing that we want. We want that type of wholeness. We want that type of peace. But to get there is actually a lot of work. We live in a society. Richard Rohr wrote a book called Falling Upward, where there's two halves of life. In the first half of life, we are trying to prove ourselves. We're trying to build things. We're trying to discover our identity sexually and economically and make ourselves. And that's okay. Like, that's part of what like creates the world and builds the world, because you got that energy and you need to show people what's up. The problem is some of us don't find satisfaction or health or wisdom in the first half of life. So in the second half of life, we're still doing those things. The gift of a community, hopefully like a faith community, is you have some people who have gone through it. And then they're on the other side. They know that you don't know, but they don't need to prove that to you. They just get to be there for you and be a mirror for you in whatever you're trying to prove into the world. And that we need that kind of wisdom from one another. And Richard Rohr's level of peace, the wholeness that he represents, it's so evident that why it's there is that this is a man of practices. This is a man who lives in presence, understands and has attention to where God is at and what God is doing in the world. He has a center called the Center for Action and Contemplation. He's aware that so much of our liberal energy in the world is to bring justice, is to make wrongs right, is to talk about equality. But he's also aware that we will never be able to sustain those things if we don't live in the world of contemplation, if we don't live with presence and peace. I've been to enough rallies, and many of you have as well, and it's frantic energy at times. It's passionate energy for justice at time. And I've been to just enough rallies and organizations to see them fizzle out. Because it's not sustainable. Because that kind of sustainability, that rich change that really brings about freedom in the world, that really brings about justice in the world, it needs something way deeper than that frantic energy or anger, even though it's righteous. Even though it's good, even though you're mad for a reason, it needs something deeper in those coals to keep that fire burning. And so to talk about that, we're going to talk about attention this morning. I want to define attention for you. Attention is someone or something you look at or listen to it or think about it carefully.
In the passage that we're going to read, what I love about Jesus is that Jesus constantly brings us back to putting our attention on God. That sounds like such a simple statement to say in a church, but sometimes I think me being a good liberal in the world, my attention is on everything else, and sometimes I'm good at talking around God and about God, but I'm not always good at having my attention on God or with God. And the peace, the wholeness that I desire is not about or around God. It's with. And the truth is, sometimes it just takes suffering to throw you into the arms of God. It takes difficult years and difficult seasons to remind you, oh, the concept of this thing will never bring wholeness or healing into this world. Only relationship with this thing will truly bring about that. So to talk about attention, we're going to talk about some things today. We already talked about Richard Rohr, and if we can talk more about Richard Rohr, then we'll talk about peace. If we can understand peace, then I want to bring you to this idea of the attention economy. If we can talk about the attention economy, then we need to do a little bit of a reprise for the Gospel of Mark, which we've been in. We are about to make it through not quite the first chapter of Mark today. So we're just going at a very big pace. If we can do a reprise, then we're going to talk about language, and then action, and then practice, and then that builds habits. And if we can talk about that, then we're going to talk about other. And if we can understand other, then maybe we need to learn to trust again. And if we can learn to trust again, then a story about Father Makarios. Sound good? Follow along with me in Mark chapter 1. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." Jesus replied, "Let us go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also. That is why I have come." So he traveled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons. And apparently that is the end of the passage. Okay, great. A quick reprise in the Gospel of Mark is that something I just want to remind us of some ideas at New Abbey. Some ideas about God that hopefully allow us to have deeper relationship with God in a way that's more fuller and more meaningful. If you ever hear a version of God that sounds angry or bitter or vengeful, if you ever hear a version of God that excludes people or puts them down, or where the standard for humanity is that not that everyone is made equally in the image of God, then don't worry about that version of God. You don't have to fight those people. You don't have to prove them wrong theologically. You don't have to get in the comment section of Instagram and let them know that you also read a Rob Bell book. You don't need to do any of that. You just get to know that Jesus already came to show you a better version of who God is. Jesus already came to do that for you. Jesus shows us the best of who God is and the best of who we are. I've said this quote 1,000 times, and I'll say it again about Richard Rohr, that Richard Rohr says that Jesus came not to change God's mind about us, but to change our mind about God. I repeat those things 1,000 times in here until it seeps deep within our souls, until it's in our very DNA, where you no longer have to prove yourself to anybody. You no longer have to convince yourself of a God who is playing games with you. God is not. Jesus comes to show us this better version of who God is. Then in the Gospel of Mark before this, what we see is that Jesus comes, and that at Jesus' baptism, in this first moment before Jesus has done anything, just the very being of Jesus, that God speaks over him and says, "This is my Son, whom I love and with whom I am well pleased." And what we realize here and what we remember here, what we remind ourselves of here, is that if it's true of Jesus, if it's true of me, that I am a child of God. I am loved. God is pleased with me. I don't have to prove that, show that, change that, do anything for that. That just is real. But to accept that, to know that I'm okay, will take a lifetime to surrender to. And then Jesus goes out, and the thing that Jesus does again and again and again is that Jesus heals. That's all of the stories before this. Jesus, you can't give what you don't have. Jesus is able to go out there and heal and to show that kind of compassion because he knows who he is. He knows what kind of presence he has. He is the Son of God. He is loved by God. He is pleased by God. You can take that energy with you out into the world, and that can become sustainable. And Jesus takes that out there, and the ministry that Jesus does is one of healing again and again and again. That everywhere Jesus goes, he leaves people better than he found them. That is the work of Jesus. Something that we're reminded early on in Mark 1 as well, before we get to this place, is that Jesus calls followers to him. Now, something that I talked about a couple weeks ago, and it's just worth repeating here, and this is literally something that has changed my life, is this idea. I grew up in the world that you're either just born and bred and following the blood of Christ, right? I don't know why I turned Southern there, but it just made sense. And if you're not, you're going to hell. If you're not, thank you, brother. Thank you, brother. They got to know. This is a side story. I love that you said that. One time I went to a church with my wife's family, and this is like a random church in Colorado, and this woman said to me, and she turned around. You know, like they have like the greeting time, like you greet people, and she's like, is this your first time here? She's like, it is. She's like, what I love about this small congregation is we get to know the sin that's in one another's lives. And I'm like, yeah, that's, well, I got some shit to tell you, I'll tell you that. You're going to be real surprised. Anywho. And we're back, commercial break. Thank you so much. That Jesus doesn't create this world of you're my followers or you're going to hell. In fact, Jesus does quite the opposite. There is a dichotomy that's in the Gospel of Mark. There is the crowd and there are the followers. But to the crowd, and this, like, I don't know why this gets me so worked up. Like, this is like 2 months ago I realized this. And I'm like, where has this been? Jesus just always heals the crowd. He always heals the crowd. He doesn't condemn them. He doesn't send them away. He says he healed everybody. That's the work that Jesus does to the crowd. And this is where the magic happens. But then Jesus says, oh, but if you want to follow me, it's going to be harder. You're going to have to carry your own cross. This is where the path is narrow. Not the path is narrow that you're going to hell. No, no. It's just going to be more work to have to deal with your family issues. It's going to be more work to sit deep with yourself and deal with the systematic issues in this world that bring you pain. It's going to be more work to sit with God. It's going to be more work to develop these habits. If you don't choose that, just know I'm always going to heal you because that's what I do because I'm God. I'm always going to show up for you even when you don't show up for yourself because that's what a good God does. But if you want to follow me, oh man, this life that I have for you. I've come that you may have life and life to the fullest. These are the words of Jesus. And that's where we get to this passage, is that Jesus has been out there healing, making people's lives better. Jesus has been out there taking care of the crowd. He has called some people to follow them. And Jesus is always, always modeling for his followers a better way of doing things. And this is not a story about more quiet time, although that's an important practice and kind of where we're going. This is not a story just about rest. This is a story about Jesus constantly drawing his attention to God. Constantly creating space where he can feel the presence of God. Constantly coming to that place because only out of that can he continue to heal. Can he continue to make lives better? Does he have something to offer the world? And what you see in the story is Jesus knows that he's in that solitary place. He's in that place of prayer. And immediately the demands of his life are on him again. They are knocking on the door. What are you doing? Everyone is looking for you. And he just says, let's go. Let's go to those villages. Let's heal those people. Let's make sure that we deal with the demons that are in their life. And let's tell them a good news that's way more incredible. But you can only do that if he seeks a life of finding the presence of God. And this is maybe like one of the most like evangelical things I've said in a while, but I just know it to be true. I know it to be true in this season of my life. Sometimes you're just reminded of things. Sometimes you forget things. There's a priest in Pasadena that used to say, all that we do when we come to church is we reverse the amnesia of the world. We just remind ourselves of the things that we have forgotten, the things that we know to be most true. And I think what Jesus reminds us of is that we need to put our attention towards God. There's this idea that I was introduced to in the last couple weeks called the attention economy, that we all live in a world where everything about our economy is just demanding your attention. That's what it's trying to do. It wants to know that it can feed on your attention, that your attention equates to dollar signs. I'm not like the like rapture pastor. It's the mark of the beast, people coming for you. They want you to scroll. But it's real. From an AI psychological perspective, the economy runs on your attention, on you focusing about it. And we know that it's real. How many of us wake up? The first thing we do is turn on those phones. Oh, yeah, those faces. And how good does that feel when you do it? when that email starts flooding in, you see that text messages from that family member, and you start to have that feeling starting off your day already. You opened it up, and you already saw someone won a primary, and you are losing your mind. We can go on and on and on. I'm just hypothetically throwing things out there is all I'm saying. But when we start our days like that, frantically engaged in all kinds, in everyone else's attention, it impacts our life, and we don't have very much to give. Now we're scrambling to find attention for what we need. Now we're scrambling to find attention to give good attention to love and to compassion and to care and to goodness and to the beauty of the world, because our attention has already been scrambled from the very moment that we start. And Jesus is just simply modeling for us, how do we put our attention on God? That Jesus later on in the Gospel of John will say these things, would you abide in me as I abide in the Father, right? Abiding is just this idea of home. Come make home in me. Come make rest in me. Home where it's safe, where you can be here, where you're known, where you're cared for. I was having a conversation with my two boys even on church, coming to church today, and we were talking about this idea of we always stand up for one another. We always defend one another as a family. We always speak the best about one another. My kids are 10, 8, and 6. That does not happen every day, people. We were at a baseball game last night, and my daughter was off running around, and there were some older girls, and they wanted to exclude my oldest son. And when you're a 6-year-old girl, and there are older girls there, you're like, they're the best, right? And sometimes you do it to the exclusion of the people that you love, and we're just having this conversation of, but not in our home. In our home that we do, if someone else is trying to exclude those that we love, we don't enter into that place. Because what we do is we create safety here in our home, that you can show up as the fullness of who you are and always be cared for and always be loved and always be known. And we will never sacrifice that so that we can go get a little approval over there and have a few more friends over there or whatever the thing is over there. And my kids know that at the deepest part of their beings, right? A 6-year-old can fully understand that. And that what Jesus is inviting us into is this place of understanding where home is at, of creating space in your life where you can go there and you can know, I'm okay here. I'm safe here. I'm good here. I can recharge here. There's this phrase that I got from Rob Bell 10 years ago. He put it in a book, and really it's just a really great synopsis of the Bible and Christian tradition. And it goes like this, that God is with us, God is for us, and God is ahead of us. God is with us is the story of the nativity and of Christmas. God comes to be with us, Emmanuel. God for us is the story of Lent and of Easter. God is for us, even when we can't be for ourselves. God ahead of us is the rest of the story of Scripture, that God is constantly ahead of the people of God, taking care of them, even when they don't realize that God is taking care of them. It's a beautiful synopsis. Something I'm realizing more and more as I spend time in the Gospel of Mark and this season, as I spend time in contemplation and reading these stories about Jesus, is that I have spent so much time talking about God being with us, and I have forgotten my opportunity, my responsibility, if I'm choosing to be a follower, by the way. I don't have to be. And this is not one of those, like, at the end of this, I'm going to ask you to raise a hand. Well, I will twice, but that's different. It's not that. Thank you for the laugh over there. That was nice. Thank you. I appreciate that. It really is. I can be the crowd. Jesus will show up and Jesus will heal me. But if I want to take this seriously, if I want to move into this deeper, richer life of following Jesus, if that's the thing that I want for my life, there's just a different responsibility to that. You ever have a moment where you're like, I completely forgot where I was going? I'd never had one of those moments before. That's weird. I have to look at my phone. That is a good day. Can I tell you guys a story? This is a fun little story while I look at this thing. I actually don't know where I was going now. That's perfect. Great. Here we go. I was just like, I had like 3 conversations going on in my head. I was thinking about my kids this morning, and here we go. Be with God. Thank you so much. I could have just asked you guys. That was way easier. Round of applause, please. Being with God is something different that I need to practice. Here's how all practices work. If you don't practice something, you're not going to have that habit, and it's just not going to work for you. Have you ever tried learning a new language? I have downloaded so many apps to learn Spanish. It's absolutely incredible. To my surprise, looking at those apps twice and paying over $600, I have not learned any Spanish. I know it's mind-blowing. Yeah. ¿Cómo estás, mi amigos? Yeah, I can get a little bit by, but that's extent. You get it. because I'm not practicing it. Jesus is always inviting us into a life of practice. How practice works is that there's some point in our life where we have to develop language around something. We develop language around it because we know that we want it and we believe that this thing is going to be good or whatever it is for our life. We do this all the time around New Year's. You tell yourself somewhere early November before Thanksgiving, there is going to be a time in my life where I work out, but it will definitely be in January in Jesus' name. So you start to develop a language about this time in your life that you're going to go work out or create a different habit that you want for yourself. The psychologist will tell us that when we develop a language for something that we want to the first action step that we take, oftentimes it takes 6 months between that moment and this moment. You'll say, I want to go do these things, and then 6 months later, I buy my first pair of running shoes, or I finally get that 24-hour fitness, subscription, whatever it may be, and then I start into the thing. So you start with language around something, and then eventually you take an action, but now the practices are way more difficult. And it takes months and months of practices for something to actually become a habit. And you just know when you have a habit in your life. I've had different seasons of habits. There was like 3 years of my life where I would go to a CrossFit gym 5 times a week. It just was a part of me. I would always make time for it. It was so easy to do. No big deal. And then there are other seasons of my life. It is just so painful to think about putting on a running shoe and running like 2 miles. And we all know that feeling inside of us. And what Jesus is trying to invite us into is not like this old school prescriptive model of like quiet time, that this is the way that you need to do it, and if you don't do it, you're never going to be connected to God. Jesus is constantly trying to open up and model for us a way of, look what fullness in life can look like. Look at the life that I offer the world, that when I leave people, I leave them better than I found them. Isn't that the life that you also want to offer the world? Look at this peace that I have, or this wholeness that I have. And the great thing that Jesus models for us is it's not a fairy tale. Jesus models this peace and Jesus models this wholeness through suffering, through betrayal, through pain, through people not believing in him, through his own family not showing up, for his friends not being there. It's real life. And Jesus models it for us in a different way. And so the thing that we think about is, what are some practices that we can begin to initiate where we turn our attention towards God? Again, I talked about this a couple weeks ago. I know that we all know how to do this because there's so many good liberals already in this room. You've shown up to a yoga class where they ask you to check in with yourself, and you can check in with your, place your feet on the ground, start to breathe. You know how to do that. You already know how to do that. You've learned mindfulness. My kids have a mindfulness teacher at their elementary school. It's 2024, people. That's incredible, right? We know how to teach this. And I think what Jesus brings us into is one step a little deeper from mindfulness and one step a little deeper from like an idea of quiet time. It's just simply, where's your attention at? You can already bring your attention to yourself. Can you begin to bring your attention to this idea that God is there as well? And I believe that you can. I believe that we can. I believe it's a real thing that people practice all the time. I believe that it's really, truly only out of that deep depth of recognizing that there's other here with me as well, that we truly find life. And the reason for that is, there's going to come a day where you bring your attention to yourself, where you're practicing your own mindfulness, and you don't have anything to give. Because you're a human being. And there will be a day where you are finite. And there will be a day where you are fragile. And there will be a day where you are suffering. And there will be a day where you have nothing. But there will always be a God there who has something. And we practice these things so that on the day that we need it, it's there for us. And it's not that it ever went away. It's that we could have eyes to see. And that we could have ears to hear that God's presence was there. That's the deeper invitation here. Now, I know that maybe I'm saying some of these things, and maybe there's still some skepticism or some questioning about that, and I understand that. Part of this journey, if you're newer to New Abbey, or if you're just newer to deconstructing or reconstructing or kind of coming back into this world, is trusting that God is there again. And I completely understand that, and I always want to be sensitive to that, and we'll always create space for that. And I think part of what this room is so beautiful for is that we get to remind each other of, oh, I've been there. I know what that's like. I've been through those seasons. And now I'm practicing this place of attention again, and I'm seeing it create health and beauty and goodness in my life. I was at yoga this week, me and every other housewife apparently at 9 a.m. It just was that class. And we're sweating it out, and I You ever just have like a moment? But let me slow down. I feel like I'm like preaching at you. Can I just like slow it all down and just have some stories with you? Where do I want to go? How am I going to get emotional here? Because I feel it. 2023 was one of the hardest years of my life. It just was. Nothing throws you into the arms of God like suffering. And in 2023, some of you would invite me to coffees, or you'd want to have a beer. I just couldn't do it. I didn't have the space within myself to hear your pain. I just didn't have it. And I just had to come back to these places of reminding myself that God is not only with me, but I can be with God. And I just started practicing that more consistently in my life. For me, it's the shower. I love sitting in my shower, and I just sit there with God and reminded that I can be with God. And I turn my attention that God is here with me. And as I've done that, people, I'm the craziest closet charismatic you've ever known, okay? It's not how I normally talk. It's never like a group of people that I've grown up with. Like, I didn't grow up in charismatic church. It's just how I personally experience God. And the more that I've sat in the space, the more mystical that it's been. And there's just been like some very funky things that have been happening in my life over the last 6 months. Very much like old school, like when I was like a college kid and I'm like, I'm listening to God and next I'm going to Indonesia next week. You know, like one of those it felt, but it's more calm. And it's more gentle. And it's more where I feel like God is showing up. And like, it's, I don't talk this way, so this way it wasn't going to go here in my sermon, but I'm talking at you guys. I'm like, I got to just slow this thing down. I have this moment. It was Monday night, and I'm sitting there with my kids, and as I've been practicing attention with God, that attention and that practice and that habit that I am with God carries with me outside of my space in the shower. I'm hearing and listening for it in a different way in the rest of my life, and I'm just sensing and listening to God there as I'm sitting on the couch with my kids, and I had just one of these moments that I should go to yoga tomorrow. I know that sounds crazy. I'm not trying to convince you that God was talking to me. I'm just telling you what I heard in that moment. And so I signed up for my hot 8 yoga class, and I show up there, and we had just gone skiing before. My body's all tight. It was one of those, what I love about yoga is like you kind of physically exhaust yourself, and now all your defenses are down. And as the defenses are down and we're coming to the end of class, the lights are dark. I had this moment last year where I would go to hot 8 yoga through just a bunch of suffering and a bunch of pain, and at the end of yoga class, I would sit there and cry in the dark by myself because I just needed my defenses to be down, and I just was so sad. And at the end of yoga on Tuesday, I felt that need to cry again, and I was checking in with myself. I'm like, but I'm not sad. And I went outside in the rain, and I'm looking up, and I'm just kind of processing where I'm at. And then it hit me. I feel so overwhelmed and want to cry because I'm at peace. And I can't remember the last time that I've been at peace. And it was a reminder of, oh, thank you, God, for all of these reminders and all this opportunity to practice being with you. There's going to come seasons in my life again, guaranteed, where I will not be at peace or where things will go wrong, but I can be at peace, where I can keep coming back to this place. And that's what I want. That's really, I should have just saved you guys 20 other minutes and just told you that story, really. But that's what I want for this community. I realize more and more and more, all I'm trying to do and create here is create a space where you can be reminded of home within yourself, that God is there with you and you can be there with God, and that's the thing that's going to carry you on the journey. That's the gift, not some words that a pastor's going to say. Everything else we're doing is just creating the space for that. Maybe you get to bring your defenses down, drop your guards, and be reminded of a deeper truth, and that's the thing that's going to carry you. That's the thing that's going to be there for you. And so I'll end with this story of Father Makarios that I heard this week, and I think it's beautiful. Father Makarios was this Greek priest. And they came to him, and he was old, and he was wise, and he had wisdom in his soul. And he said, Father Makarios, do you still wrestle with the devil? He goes, no, I'm too old for that now. And the devil's grown too old with me. I don't wrestle with the devil. He said, what do you do? He's like, I wrestle with God. He's like, you wrestle with God, and you hope to win? He's like, no, I hope to lose. I hope to surrender every time. That's the depth that we want. In our first half of life, as I look around this room, we'll all have many demons to wrestle with. We'll prove ourselves and build our worlds and create whatever we need. But as we practice more, as we sit deep with who God is, as we know God's there, then we'll wrestle. Then we'll struggle. And there we'll surrender. And that's where the magic is, my friends. Would you find the same three or four people around you? Would you answer this question together? How can you practice turning your attention to God?